Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me add my welcome to the welcome of Joe David and Andrew before me. I am not the normal preacher. In fact, there's not much I'm normal at. But in addition to that, I'm not the regular preacher here either. That is Brother Michael Whittington. But once a month, we give him a week off, and somebody else, usually from the ministry staff, fills in. Every once in a while, we put a total rank amateur up here so that you will know how good it is that you have it. And so, next week, when Brother Witt is back, you will appreciate him even more. I am really excited about being able to talk to you today, and in part because it's kind of a special Sunday for me. I have all of my children here today. And I'm getting to an age where that doesn't happen real often. And so I'm really excited to have all of them here. And I'm especially excited because this will be the first time that my grandson, Micaiah Adventure Rucker, has a chance to hear me preach. So that's pretty exciting. Now, should he get up and leave, I just want you to know that his favorite sermon really has to do with the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And he really likes the part where the sun comes back out and dries up all the rain. I wasn't sure how to work that theologically into my message, and so if he gets too anxious waiting for that part, he may have to go. So we'll see how that goes. There was also a celebrity sighting today. Josh and Lindsay Diggs are back visiting, so we are happy to have them. Be sure and say hello. I don't see Josh right now, but I just want to remind you, some of you may remember that a few months ago when he was preaching here, I woke up and had a text that went to several of us saying, "I am deathly ill. Can somebody preach for me today?" And I agreed to do it. And so on short notice, I preached for Josh that Sunday. So we're having our meeting back here in his old office, and the meeting dismisses, and I walk out, and there is Josh standing there. And I thought, payback time. But the slides were already loaded, and I wasn't sure he could read my handwriting, so I decided not to call that favor in. But Lindsay, will you tell Josh he still owes me one, okay? All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Our sermon topic is by faith, and I had my son read a rather long passage from there, and we kind of skipped the beginning. And at the very beginning, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Assurance about what we do not see. And so I was reading a book a few years ago, and it made an interesting point about faith. The point that it was making was that the Israelites did not have to have faith because they had God in their presence. And he was, a cloud during the day. He was a fiery tower at night. And so he was there, and they were seeing his actions, and they were seeing his miracles. And so they really did not have to have faith, and they showed it often as they struggled. There's this peculiar passage that Jesus says when he's talking to his disciples, and he tells them, I need to go because it's going to be better for you when I'm gone. And I read that going, I don't think so. I would want to be right there with him. But you look at history, and you see that when Jesus left, a ministry that was centric to the location of where he was became a ministry with the power of the Holy Spirit that spread out to the whole world. And so it really was better for Jesus to leave for his message to go on. Then faith could really step up. Now, I had Timothy read kind of the awkward part of Hebrews 11 that we don't spend a lot of time in. We like the earlier parts, the stories of Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Moses and Rahab, because it works out pretty good for most of those people most of the time. But I had Timothy read the part that had to do with really faith in adversity. People getting sawn in two, getting torn asunder, going to prison, being flogged and cursed, and all those other wonderful things that we probably don't like to think about as much. But that's where faith oftentimes can really step up. And so we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk about, you know, how did they do it a little bit? But I'm not sure I can answer that question really well. The question I think that I can answer that is a little bit more important to us today is, how do we do it? How do we show and demonstrate our faith when we are in adversity? And so I want to come back to the end of what Timothy read today, Hebrews 12, 1 through 3, and Miguel also read this passage. And in this passage, it starts with the word therefore. Now, you've got to remember that the chapters are rather arbitrarily assigned. They weren't written by the authors of the book. They didn't break it up into verses and chapters. So that was a sign for convenience later. And sometimes the chapter breaks break up a thought that's really going on. Therefore is a clear indication that this ties back to what we've just been reading about. And we've just been reading about these people who suffered, who did not see the end result. But we get this therefore, and so it's a connected thought. And so as we take a look at this, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. So how do we show faith in adversity? One of the things I think is real important is that we have a purpose. It's important to have a purpose. I remember when Angie and I were doing some remodeling work on our kitchen. And we have a bar that goes there, and so we were going to move it. We were going to shift it, and we were going to use that space a little bit differently. And so we had our contractors in, and they said, well, you could do it this way, or you could do it that way, or you could do it this way, or you could. And the more we talked to them, the more confused we became. And they had tape going different places. You know, it could look like this, and it could, you know, and there'd be, you know, all of this. And so we were at the day meeting with the contractors. If we wanted it done in our time schedule, we had to make a decision that day. And we were, you know, a little bit at a loss. And I looked at Angie and I said, why are we doing this? And Angie was like, oh, panic. He's gonna bail on me here. And I was like, no. Why are we doing this? And she said, well, we're doing this because we, and she listed the two or three things that our purpose was for doing this. And I said, okay, that means that this is the right setup. It's the one that's going to work best to fulfill that purpose. And she said, yeah. And the contractor said, that makes sense. And we went forward. We needed to remember what our purpose was. What was our intent? And so we have a purpose. In the second verse, it says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And so we have a purpose. Well, we also have a focus. We were out driving, going to look at some holiday decorations and such the other night, and we passed this area where Abigail says, oh, I remember I took a driving class there. And she said, there's one thing that I remember from that driving class. What I remember from that driving class is the car goes where your eyes are. And so if you look down, the wheel tends to come with you. You're looking over here, the wheel tends to go with you. If you're looking straight ahead, the car tends to go straight ahead. And she said, that's the one thing that I remember and that has really helped me. And she told us about driving in Haiti and a rock hitting the windshield, but she kept her head straight and kept the car straight, which was in Haiti. She had a motorcycle right on her side. If she had swerved, it would not have been a pretty sight. And so she kept her focus. She kept her eyes where we need to keep our focus on Jesus, fixing our eyes on Jesus. And in the third verse, consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Consider him. Consider Jesus. And so what this is telling us is that we have a champion. We have somebody who's been there and been through all of those things that we may have gone through. We have a champion who has done more than we have done. And so a lot of times it's easier when somebody paves the way. There are a few people, a relatively few people in this world who will go out, who will pave the way, who will set the path, and who will march forward. But once they go, it's easier to follow the path that they have been on. Somebody else has done this. If Joe David can do it, I can do it. Exactly. And so, now Jesus did much, much more than we could ever do, but he has been there, he's done it, he understands, he's paved the way. It makes it easier for us. Now I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I want to go to a story that is not specifically listed in Hebrews 11, but I think it fits in that passage where Timothy read. One of those unnamed heroes of faith. And so we're going to take a look at 1 Kings 22. And in 1 Kings 22, we have, some players in this story that we're going to be talking about. And the first one, by chance, don't know how this worked out, is Micaiah. Micaiah was a prophet of God. And I'll go ahead and spill the beans a little bit, a little bit of an alert here for giving away the story, but he's the hero. But he's somebody that we do not really know a whole lot about. He was Micaiah, prophet of God, the son of Imlah. And that is mostly what we know about him outside of this story. Now we have Ahab. Ahab was the king of Samaria. In case you don't remember, Ahab was not a very good fellow. And in the words of Scripture, as they describe the kings, he continued to do the evil things that his father did, and he did more. And one of the big evil things that he did is he married a woman named Jezebel. And, there's a reason why a lot of us don't name our children Jezebel. She's at the top of the list when it comes to evil. And she influenced him, and she led him into more and more evil. Next, we have Jehoshaphat. Boy, with a name like that, he got picked on in school. But Jehoshaphat was the king of Judah. And he was a good king, which makes it kind of bizarre, his place in this story. He was one of those that continued to do the good things that his father did, but did even more good things. Now, he didn't do everything he could do. He left some things out that he should have cleaned up, but he was still considered a good king who continued the good things of his father and did even a few things more. But one of the weird things that he did is decided he needed an alliance with Ahab. And so he married his son to one of her daughters and formed an alliance, a relationship, which will fit into our story in just a minute. We have Zedekiah. He is the leader of the 400 prophets. Again, we don't know a whole lot about him. What we do know about him is that he was big on object lessons. And so you'll understand that more in just a minute. And then we've got to have the bad guys. And so the Arameans will be, I guess, the bad guys in our story. And I will tell you more because I've got to give you a little bit of backstory so you'll understand the story that I'm telling you about. And so Ben-Hadad was the king of Aram. And he decided to go and to fight Ahab. And so he went to invade Ahab and wanted to take over some land. And by the way, the relationship between these countries had not been good for a long time. Ben-Hadad's dad had actually taken some cities from Samaria, and other things. And so Ben-Hadad decided to come have this battle. And again, this story has so many strange twists to it. But Ben-Hadad comes and he tells Ahab, you know, I'm going to invade unless you give me all your silver and gold and throw in some wives and children too. And so apparently Ahab sends a package of stuff and people to him, but he decides to invade anyway. And so Ahab's not sure what to do. And God enters the story and says, I'm just going to demonstrate that I really am God. And so he tells Ahab that he's going to win this battle. And again, Ahab, you know, out of character, says, okay, God, what should I do? And God gave him instructions, and he followed those instructions. And so they had this battle in the hills, and they defeated Aram, and they ran off. And so, you know, Aram goes, you know what? Ahab must have a strong God of the hills. And so we're going to attack again, but this time we're going to attack him in the valley. And so they gathered up their troops, and they came back, and so again, there's a face-off that lasts about 7 days, and then it's time for battle, and it was a resounding defeat. Samaria just 100,000 Aramean soldiers were killed in this battle. Huge, huge for that time. Now, the king, Ben-Hadad, was like, you know what? I've heard Ahab can be a softy. And so they went to see Ahab and said, oh, Ahab, you whipped us, you beat us, have mercy on me. And Ahab said, you know what, I will have mercy on you if you return the cities that your dad took and restore, you know, some of the gold and silver. And Ben-Hadad said, sure thing, not a problem. They signed a treaty. Ben-Hadad goes back home, and nothing is ever returned to Samaria. And in fact, there's a prophet, we don't know who this prophet is, might be Micaiah, is sent to deliver a message to Ahab. And it's a bizarre story. Again, he goes up to a person and says, here, you know, beat me up. The guy says, no. He goes to somebody else, beat me up. He gets somebody who will wound him. And so he bandages himself up, and he goes to King Ahab, and he goes, oh, I was supposed to be guarding a soldier, and he got away from me. And Ahab was like, well, you get what comes to you. You deserve that. And he whips off the bandage and he says, and that's what God says to you. I had decreed that Ben-Hadad would die. And yet you have befriended him and let him go. And it's going to be a life for a life. You will give your life for his. And so this prophet gets probably thrown into prison for making that proclamation. Now we're heading up to our story. And so where our story takes place is 3 years later. And I think it was Thanksgiving, I'm not sure, but Jehoshaphat has gone up to visit King Ahab. Now get the families together for a little celebration. And while they're there, Ahab says, hey, you know what? The Arameans never returned those cities. I'm thinking about go to war with them. Would you go to war with me? And Jehoshaphat says, hey, I am like you. My army is like your army. My horses are like your horses. Sure, it'll be fun, but shouldn't we maybe call upon the Lord and see what he says? And Ahab says, yeah, sure. And so he brings in 400 prophets. Now, this is kind of interesting because Ahab's wife Jezebel had this little side hobby. That little side hobby was killing prophets of the Lord. And so there were a lot of them that had been dead. There were a lot of them that had hidden. Actually, one of Ahab's men, Obadiah, you've heard of him, he hid 100 prophets, 50 in two different caves, and brought them provisions. And so, but here are 400 prophets. Are they prophets of the Lord? Were they one-time prophets of the Lord? We're not really sure. But what we know now is they come in singing the chorus, you're gonna win, you're gonna win, you're gonna win. And that's exactly what Ahab wants to hear, and so they put on a show, and they proclaim that he's going to be victorious. And Jehoshaphat, you know, he goes, that's cool, but is there a prophet of the Lord, maybe, that we could consult? Ahab says, yeah, there's one, but I hate him. He never says anything good to me. You shouldn't say that if he's a prophet of the Lord. So Ahab says, okay, fine. So they call him and go and get him. Now, I think he was in prison because they seem to know exactly where to find him. They bring him out quickly. He has a handler. He has an escort. And when that escort is taking him, he says, look, the other prophets, without exception, are predicting success for the king. Let your word agree with theirs and speak favorably. But Micaiah said, as surely as the Lord lives, I can tell him only what the Lord tells me. When he arrived, the king asked him, Micaiah, shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead or not? Attack and be victorious, for the Lord will give it into the king's hand. The king said to him, how many times must I make you swear to tell me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? And so Micaiah was mocking him, and he was mocking the other prophets. And interestingly enough, he has told Ahab the truth, and Ahab hates it, so now Ahab scolds him for not telling him the truth. You know? Anyway. Then Micaiah answered, I saw all Israel scattered on the hills like sheep without a shepherd, and the Lord said, these people have no master, let each one go home in peace. The king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, didn't I tell you he never prophesies anything good about me, but only bad? Now, Micaiah continues, and I want you to think about something. As he continues, it's a scene reminiscent of Ezekiel. It's reminiscent of John when he's doing his revelation. It's reminiscent of Stephen right before he's stoned. He says, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne with all the multitudes of heaven standing around him on his right and on his left. One of those powerful passages where someone has looked up into heaven and it has opened up and they have seen the throne room. And the Lord said, who will entice Ahab into attacking Ramoth-Gilead and going to his death there? One suggested this and another that. And finally, a spirit came forward, stood before the Lord and said, I will entice him. By what means? The Lord asked. I will go out and be a deceiving spirit in the mouths of all his prophets, he said. You will succeed in enticing him, said the Lord. Go and do it. So now the Lord has put a deceiving spirit in the mouths of all these prophets of yours. The Lord has decreed disaster for you. Then Zedekiah, son of Kenaiah, who went up and slapped Micaiah in the face. Which way did the spirit from the Lord go when he went from me to speak to you, he asked. Micaiah replied, you will find out on the day you go hide in an inner room. I forgot to tell you, I told you that Zedekiah liked object lessons. He had a couple of iron horns he had made, and he was dancing around in front of the king going, you will gore them like this. You will gore them like this. You will be so victorious, you will gore them like this. And so when Micaiah comes up with the alternative interpretation, Zedekiah slaps him. And this ominous line, you will find out on the day you go to hide in an inner room. And so Ahab is frustrated, and he sends Micaiah back to prison and says, he gets nothing but bread or water until I come back. And Micaiah says, if I come back, it will prove that I am not from the Lord. But all of you bear witness to this. He ain't coming back. So Micaiah is carted off to prison. And so now we're getting ready for the battle. And again, this is a bizarre story, okay? Because here's Ahab's great idea. Hey, Jehoshaphat, I'm going to go into battle in disguise so nobody knows who I really am, but I want you to wear the royal robes and lead us into battle. What do you say? And Jehoshaphat says, sounds like a good idea to me. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking, but he agreed to it. And so he dresses in his royal robes. Ahab is disguised. They go into battle. Now, the king of Aram had said, look, there's only one target here. You go after the king. You go after Ahab. That's who I want. And so they go into battle. There's Jehoshaphat in his royal robes on the chariot, and they all turn and start to attack. And he goes, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not really who you think I am. I'm not Ahab. And they figure out he's not Ahab, and they leave him alone. But one archer, just at random, pulls his bowstring, sends an arrow flying, and it hits Ahab. And Ahab says, I am wounded, get me out of here. And he lays in his chariot, bleeding to death. And late in the battle, late in the evening, the word comes out that he is dying. And the word goes out, every man is on his own, go back to your home. And just as Micaiah prophesied, like sheep without a leader, everybody went back home. And Ahab dies, and the life for the life that was promised is delivered at that point. So, we end up with a couple of questions. Here are the big questions for me. What happened to Micaiah? We don't know. Did he stay in prison, eating bread and water until he dies? Do they realize he's from the Lord and release him? We never hear any more about Micaiah, and so we do not know what happens to him. This one is one I'd be interested in. What happened to Zedekiah? And I don't know for sure because that story's not told. I assume that at some point he felt it necessary to go hide in an inner room of his house and he met his demise. I'm pretty sure Micaiah was right about that one. But we don't know. We don't know for sure. So these two will be on my list of questions when I go meet the big guy. And we'll see if we can get an answer. But what do we know about Micaiah? What we know about Micaiah is that he spoke the truth and he was brave when he was opposed. He was outnumbered 400-1. And all he could do was speak the truth. And he didn't back down. And he was told as he was going there, look, this is what everybody else is saying. Why don't you just go along to get along? And he spoke the truth. Why? He spoke the truth because he only listened to God. He didn't listen to the advice of the person. And you know what? It could have gone better for him. He could have been released from prison. He might have been able to go back to his home and live a comfortable life. But he only listened to God. That is where his focus was. And we also know that he was obedient and he persevered without seeing the fruit of his labor. Doing God's will got him put in prison. And we do not know if he was ever released. We do not know. Ahab's son may have said, you're the one who spoke evil of my father. I don't want you around anymore. We don't know. We don't know what happens. But he was still obedient, even though he wasn't going to see the fruit of his labor. This fits into that description in Hebrews 11 about these people who were willing to do it, even though they didn't see the good news at the end. Because God had something even better that he had not yet revealed to them. This reminds me of another story. We won't go into it deep, but I just want to show you a passage from it. You guys remember in Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they won't bow down. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But listen to this next verse. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Micaiah has the same spirit of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That passage that Timothy read refers to blazing furnaces. It probably is a nod to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It talks about being in prison. That may be a nod to Micaiah. And so the question comes back to how do we do it today? How do we show faith in adversity? When it isn't going to get us the end result that we want right now, how do we do it? Well, we know that we have a purpose. We know that we have a purpose. If you don't know what your purpose is, let me give you a start. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Everything else rests on that. That's your purpose. Some of you know your specific purposes in serving God, but some of you are searching for that. If you're searching, you start with that passage that Jesus gave us. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. we know that we have a focus. Who is our focus? Okay, one more time. Who is our focus? Jesus, that's right. Jesus is our focus. Keep our eyes on Him, the author and perfecter of our faith. We're supposed to look more and more like Jesus all the time. How do we do that? We focus on Him and we keep moving in that direction. Are we like Him today? No. Some more than others. But I'm not. My challenge is to keep my eyes on Him so I will look more and more like Him as I get closer and closer to what God has called me to be. And then finally, know that we have a champion. Jesus has been there. He's done that. He's paved the way. He showed us how to live. He showed us how to love. He showed us how to care for others. He has showed us how to stand up to people when they slap, when they spit, when they nail you to a cross. He has shown us how we should respond to that. Let's take a look at this passage one more time. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with the perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before Him, He endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And it's probably helpful to remember that we were in the group of sinners that caused Him to die. But even when we were still enemies, He died for us. He was willing and able to die for us so that we could become like Him, so that we could call Him our brother and we can call God our Father. We're going to go into a time of prayer. Some of my co-elders are going to join me up front. There'll be a couple in the back. And this is a time, if you have something that you would like to share, to come up here and see one of us. It can be a prayer of thanksgiving. It can be a prayer of petition. It can be a prayer of confession. If you've got a good friend here that you would like to go pray with, walk over to them and pray with them. If you know they need it, or if you know they understand what you're going through, go to them. This prayer time doesn't have to be just up front. This prayer time could be with whoever you're comfortable praying with. If you want to know more about how to become like Jesus, we're ready to talk to you about that too. And we got warm water back here if you're ready to be baptized. And so whatever your need, whatever we can do for you, please come forward or pray in your seat or go find a friend and just reach out to the Lord right now as we sing. Let's all sing.